Chapter 7, Skill Number 4, Following Up with Your Prospects. In MLM, they say the fortune is in the follow-up. I think that's true, because most people in MLM don't follow up at all, at least not as professionals. You need to understand some important concepts if you're going to master this skill. Concept number one, follow-up is doing what you said you'd do. If you say you're going to call at a specific time, then do it. The network marketing profession is full of people who get all excited one minute and then go missing in action the next. Run your business through a physical or electronic calendar. Be the person who does what they say they're going to do. People will respect that. I sold real estate the year before I got involved in network marketing. My father and his partner owned the company. One day I was in the office and a gentleman by the name of Chuck Aycock showed up for a 10 a.m. meeting with my dad. It was 9:55 a.m. and my dad wasn't in the office yet. I greeted Chuck and told him I was sure my dad would arrive soon. At 10 a.m. exactly, Chuck got up and said, "It's 10 o'clock. Your dad isn't here. Have him call me if he wants to reschedule the meeting." I couldn't believe it. He came all the way to the office just to leave 30 seconds after the appointment? I told him, "Mr. Aycock, I'm sure he'll be here any minute. There's no need to leave." And then he told me something I never forgot. He said, "Son, you are either early or you are late. He's late, and my time is valuable. Have him give me a call if he'd like to reschedule." And he left. My dad showed up at 10:10 a.m. expecting to meet Chuck. I told him what happened, and he was as stunned as I was. My dad wasn't habitually late or anything. That particular morning, he was just a little casual with his time. He rescheduled the appointment, and I noticed over the years that my dad was always early for his appointments with Mr. Aycock. What's the lesson in this story? For me, the lesson was that people respect a person who does what they say they're going to do. People also respect a person who values their own time. If you say you're going to follow up at a specific time or in a specific way, either do it or reschedule well ahead of your appointment. Concept number two, the only reason to have an exposure is to set up the next exposure. When I got started, I would conclude every exposure by saying, "What do you think?" No one told me that was one of the worst things to do. It felt like a natural thing to say, but my results were terrible. I asked one of my early mentors for help, and he said, "Eric, the only reason to have an exposure is to set up the next exposure." That blew my mind. I thought the reason to have the exposure was to get the person signed up. He went on to explain that if you finish each exposure by setting up the next one, the prospect will eventually become educated on the opportunity and make an informed decision. The goal in my mind changed from getting the prospect on the first exposure to just keeping the process alive by setting up the next follow-up exposure, then the next, and the next, until they made a decision. When I made this small improvement, my results improved dramatically. We talked earlier about how to professionally invite your prospect to take a look at what you have to offer. At the end of that process, we went through several steps to set up the next exposure, meaning your follow-up call. That was your next appointment. When you make that call, you're going to ask them if they reviewed the material. They'll say, "No, I didn't," or they'll say, "Yes, I did." Let's talk about how you'll set up the next exposure in both cases. If they say no, they didn't have a chance to review the material, it's important you don't show your displeasure at their lack of follow-up. It sounds funny, but a lot of people just jump on their prospects with, "I thought you said you'd be able to see it for sure." Obviously, this won't help build that good relationship you're working on. The best way to respond is, "That's okay, I understand sometimes life gets busy. When do you think you could do it for sure, for sure?" You might say, for sure is a little much, but I've used that for decades in this follow-up situation, and I do it because it works. In any case, use whatever language you'd like to use to set up the next time and walk through the same steps to get the commitment. Once you have it, including the date and the time of the next call, the next exposure, then hang up and call them when you said you would. If you call them at the scheduled time and they still haven't reviewed the material, just repeat the process until they do. Remember, they are setting up the appointment, and you are being the professional by following up like you said you would. If you call the prospect and they say yes, they've reviewed the material, you're going to ask them a few intelligent questions. First, you're not going to ask, "What do you think?" This just invites the critical part of the prospect's mind to come up with objections to try to sound smart. The best follow-up question I've ever used is, "What did you like best?" This question will take you in a very positive direction and will give you clues as to the level of their interest. If they say the product, then your next exposure will probably be product-related. If they say financial freedom, then your next exposure will probably be opportunity related. Another great question to ask is, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being zero interest and 10 being ready to get started right away, where are you right now? With this question, anything over 1 is good. It says they have some interest. Most of the time, you'll get something like a 5 or a 6. No matter what number they give you, all you're going to do is ask them how you can help them get to a higher number. Usually that answer will go along the lines of how they answered, what did you like best? If the answer is very positive and the number is fairly high, you can go directly into the closing process. We'll cover that in the next section. If it isn't an obvious green light, then you just schedule the next exposure. They might want to try the product. So you help them do that and set up a follow-up date, a time to call them, and check on the experience, the next exposure. They might want to understand the compensation plan. So you set up a time to get together and review it, the next exposure. They might want to talk with their spouse. So you send them home with materials they can share with their spouse and set up a date and time when you'll follow up, the next exposure. Whatever it is, you never finish one exposure without setting up the next one. Never. If you do, it's over. That's what used to happen to me at the beginning. I would have someone look at the opportunity. When they'd done that, I'd say, so what do you think? They'd usually mumble something like, I'll let you know, or I'll get back to you, or I need to think more about it, or something similar. And poof, they were gone. Then when I tried to call them back, I was just bothering them. The whole thing felt uncomfortable. Once I changed to never finishing one exposure before setting up the next one, everything changed for the better. I was being professional. I was in control. The prospect had more respect for me and for the opportunity. All of this happened from this one small change in mindset. Concept number 3. It takes an average of 4 to 6 exposures for the average person to join. When people don't understand that the only reason for an exposure is to set up the next exposure, they put too much pressure on their prospects and on themselves. In the some will, some won't, so what next MLM culture, people hammer on a person once, and if they don't join right away, they move on and never follow up. In many cases, they take it a step further by damaging the relationship with the prospects with their attitude. Professionals understand that it takes an average of 4 to 6 exposures for a prospect to become involved. Their goal is education and understanding. It's hard to educate someone in one exposure. So they take them from exposure to exposure to exposure, knowing it will eventually sink in. Through that process, they also build a stronger relationship with the prospect. They strengthen the friendship. That helps build trust, and people enjoy working with people they like. 4 to 6 exposures is an average, which means that for every person who joins on the first exposure, there's going to be a person who takes more than 10 exposures to join. You just never know. Some of the best people in network marketing were prospected for years before they finally made the decision to take part in the opportunity. Keep your urgency, but have patience. Concept number 4, condense the exposures for better results. Posers prospect someone once and move on. Amateurs prospect someone through several exposures over time. Professionals condense those exposures into the shortest time possible. People are busy. They're constantly distracted by life. When you're approaching them to take a look at something new, it's important to keep their interest. The best way to do that is to stack the exposures as closely as possible. If you go slow, you might start by having them check out a video, then a few weeks later, have them listen to a conference call, then a month later, have them attend a webinar. Then after another month, invite them to a 3-way phone call with you and another distributor. This slow process is difficult because between each exposure, they tend to get distracted by life. It can almost be like starting over every time. On the other hand, if you have them check out a video, then join a conference call, then try the product, then get on a webinar, then participate in a 3-way call, then come to a live meeting, or whatever combination of exposures you use in your company, and do it all in 1 week, you give them the opportunity to really think about how this could change their lives. Questions and objections. At every step in the recruiting process, you'll come across questions and objections. This is natural. A lot of the time, your prospect will just be bringing them up to sound intelligent. They don't want to seem easy, so they throw out objections to feel better. How you respond is extremely important. If you act defensive, you'll plant a seed of doubt in their minds. If you act offensive, you'll chase them away. Remember, our goal is education and understanding. It's not to win an argument. Our job is to help blind people see. When someone brings up a negative question, or if they offer you an objection, all they're really doing is helping you to identify one of their blind spots. It's helpful to know what these are so you can assist your prospects in eliminating them. I'm going to give you some specific tactics to help overcome objections, but the thing I want you to remember and spend more time focusing on are concepts. Tactics come and go. Concepts are timeless. I found that objections fall into one of two categories. The first is the prospect's limiting belief in their abilities. They aren't sure they can be successful. The second is a limiting belief in network marketing. They aren't sure network marketing will help them achieve their goals in life. For both categories, one of the best concepts is empathy, how you relate to people. And the best way I know to relate to people is to let them know you're just like they are. You had the same doubts, the same questions, the same fears, and you overcame them. Believe it or not, your story and the stories of others will do more for you in overcoming objections than anything else. There's an old tactic called feel, felt, found. It works with the concept of empathy. When a prospect offers an objection, you respond with, "I know how you feel. I felt the same way. But here's what I found." You can use that quite literally and with great success. You can also modify it based upon your story and your prospect. When prospects have a limiting belief in their abilities, the common objections in this category are, "I don't have the money. I don't have the time. It's not my thing. I'm not a salesperson. I don't know anyone." Or, "I'm too old, too young, have no experience," etc. Some people teach fancy approaches where you make yourself seem smart and the prospect seems stupid. "You don't have any money? Do you have a cable bill? Do you have a cell phone? Do you ever go out to dinner? You have lots of money. Come on, wake up." Or, "You don't have the time? How long do you want to have that reality in your life? You have to change if you want your life to change. How does it feel when you hear that? How would it feel if someone were to say it to you? Pretty bad, right?" A better approach is to relate to the person and tell your story. When a person tells me, "I just don't have the money right now," I respond, "I had the same exact challenge. I didn't have enough money to pay my bills, let alone start a new business. But when I thought about it, I realized if I didn't have enough money to pay my bills now, how was I going to change that in the future? I was tired of being behind. I was tired of scrambling. I wanted more out of life. So you know what I did? I found a way. And it was the best decision I ever made. Let me ask you something. If you really felt this was a chance for you to take control of your financial future, do you think you could find a way to make it happen?" 9 times out of 10, they would agree they could find a way. Again, forget the exact words and focus on the concept. I told them I was the same as they were, with the same objection. I told them about my pain, and I told them I found a way to solve it. As a result, we bonded. We related to each other. We were in the same boat with the same hopes and dreams. And if I didn't have a personal story that would compare with theirs, I would tell another person's story. There are plenty of stories inside your company that could relate to virtually every situation. So when a prospect tells you their objection, you can say, "I know what you mean. I have a friend who had that same exact problem, and let me tell you their story." Can you see how that approach would work with all the objections based on a person's limiting belief about themselves and their lives? The concept is simple, it's proven, and the results are amazing. When people have limiting beliefs about network marketing, this category includes, "Is this MLM? Is this one of those things? Is this a pyramid scheme? I'm not interested in MLM. I don't want to bother my friends. And how much are you making?" Let's start with the one that strikes fear into the hearts of most people in our profession. "Is this MLM?" Or variations like, "Is this one of those things?" Or, "Is this a pyramid scheme?" Or, "I'm not interested in MLM." Some people go a little crazy when they hear this question. They say, "Pyramid scheme? Like every corporation in the world? Like the government? You mean that?" Instead of going crazy on your prospects, it's important to understand where this question comes from. My experience has shown me that they usually knew someone who joined with no success, or else they've done it themselves. Usually, they just purchased a virtual lottery ticket like I described earlier and it didn't pay off. This scenario represents well over 90% of the people who will ask this kind of question. The rest of them have heard of opportunities like this and are rightfully skeptical of the promise of getting rich quick. If they ask this kind of question with any sort of emotion, I know they've been involved at some point. So I say, "Wait a minute. You have a story. What happened? Were you involved in network marketing at some point?" Then just let them tell you their story. It opens them up. It lowers their defenses. And it allows you to ask some questions about their experience. Let me give you a typical example. I'm going through my invitation process when the prospect says, "Wait a minute, is this MLM?" And they say it with emotion. I reply, "Oh, you have a story. Did you try it out at some point? What happened?" They say, "Yeah, I joined a company a few years ago, bought some product, and lost my money." I reply, "What do you think was the reason you didn't have success?" They say, "Well, my friend talked me into it. I didn't have a lot of time, and I thought more people would join right away, but they didn't. I guess I just lost interest." I reply, "Do you think you really gave it a fair shot?" They say, "No, not really." I reply, "Do you think network marketing was the problem, or do you think maybe your timing wasn't right?" They say it was probably the timing. Do you see the dynamic? I've had thousands of these conversations, and they're all slightly different. But if you ask some questions and are friendly through the process, you have a strong opportunity to help them get rid of their blind spot and take a look at what you have to offer. In addition, you can relate to them by saying you had the same objection initially and telling them how you overcame it. If someone uses the word pyramid with me, I always say, "Oh no, pyramid schemes are illegal, and I would never be involved with something illegal." For people asking this with emotion attached, I usually respond with, "Yes, this is network marketing. Do you know anything about it?" Again, I'm asking questions and waiting for answers. From those answers, I ask more questions, and through the process, I can achieve my goal of education and understanding. I don't want to bother my friends is slightly different. Again, I relate to them by telling my story or somebody else's story. And then I ask questions like, "What makes you think you'd be bothering your friends? If you truly believed in the product, would you let your friends know about it? And if I could show you how we can share this product with others without it feeling or sounding like a sales pitch, would that help you?" The last in this category is, how much are you making? If you're making money already, this is a great question. If you're not, your answer depends on how long you've been involved. If you're brand new, you can tell them you're just getting started. If you've been around for a while and not making big money yet, you can tell them you're working part-time and are really excited about your future. You could also say that you're excited about your future with this company because you knew things weren't going to change if you didn't do something to change them. The other way to answer it is to tell your story and then tell stories of people you know who are making good money. You can even suggest setting up a phone conversation with those people so they can feel more comfortable about the opportunity. All of this takes practice, but if you get the concepts down, you'll find it becomes easy. And the other thing that should encourage you is you'll only have this handful of the same objections for the rest of your career. There's nothing new here. What I've listed in this section is about all there is. Remember, our goal is education and understanding. This is a part of the process that makes that goal a reality. Chapter 8, Skill Number 5, Helping Your Prospects Become Customers or Distributors. This skill is a natural byproduct of following up professionally. If you walk through exposure after exposure, our goal of education and understanding will be accomplished. But that doesn't mean the prospect will come out and ask you for an order form or an application. It's your job to get them to a decision. The key to success in this area is a combination of having good posture and asking good questions. Good posture means the way you carry yourself. Your words and actions will help your prospect feel more confident about joining your opportunity, or they'll plant seeds of doubt. In my early years, my posture was terrible. I was trying to get people instead of pursuing the nobler goal of education and understanding. And the prospects could feel my intentions. I was very emotionally attached to the outcome. You could even say I was needy. Every time I got to this part of the process, I really, really wanted it. Again, the prospect could feel my emotional attachment, and that usually scared them away. Through lack of results and without even realizing it, I started to assume people were not going to be interested. And that assumption started to seep into everything, which led to the predictable result of the prospect not joining. Most of the time, I wasn't properly prepared. I didn't have applications, startup materials, or whatever else was necessary. Think about the subconscious impact this had on my prospects. It seemed just about everything I did projected a lack of belief and a lack of professionalism. Instead of asking questions and listening intently to the answers, I just talked and talked and talked. I was more focused on being interesting than being interested. Prospects don't like that. No one does. So again, I followed the pattern of modeling the professionals. I watched what the best closers did and began to copy them. I interviewed the top performers to figure out what they did differently, and slowly, I started to see the flaws in my own approach. First, I learned that professionals are emotionally detached from the outcome. In other words, their goal is education and understanding while helping a prospect make a decision that would positively impact their lives. They're the opposite of needy. They aren't trying to get anybody. They are honestly just trying to help. Second, they're very assumptive in their approach. They expect the person to join because their belief that the opportunity would benefit the prospect is so strong. They're rock solid. Many of them are sincerely shocked when a person decides not to get involved. Third, it was interesting to learn they promoted themselves as much as they promoted the product or the opportunity. What I mean by that is they helped the prospect make the decision by saying, "You get me." When they promoted themselves, it isn't like, "I'm going to do everything for you." It was more like, "We have a great product and a great opportunity, but I'm going to take this thing to the top and we can do it together." This gives people great comfort in knowing that they don't have to learn everything on their own. Fourth, they are always prepared. Always. They have everything they need to get a person started right on the spot. And fifth, they ask question after question after question and are great listeners. They act like a consultant helping a person with a problem. The best consultants in the world have to ask a bunch of questions before they can offer a solution. Network marketing professionals use questions as their most powerful tool. As you can imagine, it took me a while to figure all of this out, and that was just half the battle. It's one thing to have the information, and it's another thing to put it into action. I wasn't as talented as the pros, but I could model what they did, so I just started to act like they acted. I acted emotionally detached. I really wasn't at the beginning. I started to act very assumptive that people would join. I really wasn't at the beginning. I started to tell people, "And you get me," even though I didn't think that was such a huge benefit at the beginning. I was always prepared. I started to ask lots of questions, focusing more on being interested than interesting. And as time went on, I acted less and less and believed more and more. The same can happen for you. Let's talk about questions. If you were a consultant and your job was to figure out if an opportunity was a good fit for your client, what would you do? You'd ask questions, right? In working to help a prospect make a positive decision about your opportunity, you're going to do the same thing. But instead of asking, "What did you think?" which leads nowhere, learn to ask questions that lead in a positive direction. Did it make sense to you? What did you like best about what you just saw? Pretty exciting, isn't it? Can you see how this could be an opportunity for you? Of these examples, the one I used most is, "What did you like best?" The answer to that question is almost always positive, and it gives you clues as to the area in which they're most interested. Then I like to say, "Let me ask you a question on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 meaning you have zero interest and 10 being you're ready to get started right now, where are you?" They'll give you a number. And it's usually obvious from their number that they either need more information before they'll make a decision or they're leaning towards getting started now. If you feel they need more information, just guide them to the next exposure that will help them the most. But if you feel they're ready to get started, then ask a series of 4 questions. This 4-question close has produced strong and consistent results over the course of my career. If you learn it and use it, you'll be amazed at how many people you can help. Question number 1. Based upon what you've just seen, if you were to get started with this company on a part-time basis, approximately how much would you need to earn per month in order to make this worth your time? Instead of asking this question, most distributors say things like, "How'd you like to make $10,000 a month?" Don't do that. Instead of prescribing what you think they want, just ask them what it would take to make it worth their time and wait for their answer. Question number 2. Approximately how many hours could you commit each week to develop that kind of income? Now they have to go inside their head and check their mental calendar to see how much time they would invest to get that kind of money. Question number 3. How many months would you work those kind of hours in order to develop that kind of income? This question makes them think about their level of commitment if they want the income from question number 1. Question number 4. If I could show you how to develop an income of, their answer to question number 1, per month, working, their answer to question number 2, hours a week over the course of, their answer to question number 3, months, would you be ready to get started? Most of the time, you'll get a positive answer to this question. And when people say, sure, show me how, you can pull out your compensation plan and sketch out a reasonable game plan to achieve their goals. There are rare occasions when people will give you unrealistic numbers. They might say they want $10,000 a month working 2 hours a week for 1 month. Doesn't happen often, but it does happen. If you face that situation, you act as a consultant and say, I'm sorry, but your expectations are way too high. You can get to $10,000 a month, but it'll take more hours and more months than you're willing to commit. If you're willing to change those expectations, we can talk. If you don't get a positive answer to the four questions, that's okay. That means the prospect will need to have more exposures before they're ready. Schedule the next one and repeat this process when you're done. This skill will take practice, but it's a skill that will serve you for the rest of your career. If you're tired of having too many people thinking about it and not enough taking action, this will help.